Canucks Central Friday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Looking for some special teams, special plays, special players in Game 3 as the Canucks take on the Nashville Predators. We're in the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canuck Central is for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Gambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. We didn't get to it yesterday, so we have a roundtable happening here today, as if Sat doesn't talk to Bick enough.
And I got to watch him. I look at him pregame, too.
Yeah. Could we potentially just... Well, maybe we should get Bick's mic to work.
Test.
No, it doesn't work. No, does it work?
Classic mic re-problems?
Yes.
I still got to look at you, though.
Here, I thought we were just going to get free reign to talk about the Falcons taking Michael Penix in the first round of the NFL draft last night.
That was wild.
That was pretty crazy. Now it's working. Now we've got a pick.
Yeah. Well, now we got it to work.
Mike 3 has to go through like a rookie lap, I guess, sometimes.
Yes. Sometimes, yeah. When we actually
it
got
just needs to get
like,
warmed up.
Flummoxed faces behind the glass because I don't think they touched anything.
I don't know. Mike 3,
we literally
it's just.
Touched nothing.
Yeah.
Mike 3 is just not prepared enough.
No,
you know?
Yeah. No. This is like.
It doesn't come to the rink prepared. A lot of poor starts.
It's like Niels Höglander, the first two playoff games.
Oh, wow.
I'm just kidding.
Wow. I was
going to
say like 2018 Canucks.
Just kidding.
Like,
just kidding.
Guy scored 24 goals in the season, has two off games, and Sat's just out
I'm
with
just
the knife.
Kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but it matters
just
now.
Jokes.
Two
just
off
jokes.
Games in the top six, man.
It's his first two career playoff games.
Why? Hey, it's 1-1 series, man. The only thing that matters is that you're 1-1. You need to win one of these games at least in Nashville.
Sat's like, Reach is going after Pedersen. I'm going after his line mates.
Not the Höglander.
All right, it's time for the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
Four! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The Open, our take on the latest with the Vancouver Canucks and what is happening. It is game day. It's game 3. The Canucks getting ready to make some adjustments for the Nashville Predators. And that's really the discussion here right now is what do we see in game 3? What are the adjustments they plan to make after Nashville blocked 30 shots, tying a franchise record for them? It was all of the discussion after game 2, along with Elias Pettersson not being able to get it done in some big moments. But you know, really, like we could talk adjustments all we want and this and that. It's not just Pettersson. It's kind of all of the Canucks' top players have to get a little bit more and actually execute with the opportunities they're creating.
When you're only getting 18 out of 84 shot attempts on goal, it's more than one player missing the net, right? There are a lot of guys that are also missing the net.
He's still the main character.
Like yes.
The main character on Twitter that you don't want to be.
All right,
that's
calm
Elias
down.
Pettersson.
Slow your narratives down. We'll get to it, obviously.
I started with Höglander. Reached like, I got to get in on Pettersson. It's a competition.
Someone else talks for 30 seconds. He's like, have you mentioned Pettersson yet? Pettersson? We'll get to it. Calm down.
But yes, there are a lot of players that can do better. So what are the things we're looking... The coach mentioned today, right? He wants the guys to take advantage of how Nashville's playing. There are plays there to be had. And he mentioned maybe not the first 5 or 6, 7 minutes of the game, but if you stick with it, you know, you're going to be able to get some of those chances. But two things I want to see is I want to see Preds players laying on the ice in pain because you make them pay for the fact they're in shooting lanes.
Because you teed it up.
Right. Yeah. Or you're getting more shots on goal. Like those are the two things I want to see, right? Yeah. Of course, goals is something you want to see. But in terms of adjustments, shift to shift, if they're going to get in lanes, make sure they pay for it. And find ways to get those shots through.
Yeah, but like that to me is just finer tuning what they were doing, right? Like they created looks, they hesitated or tried to find another look. But if we're talking about just cranking up the velocity of the shots and making Nashville feel the pain, it's like, well, you had looks, you just have to shoot more. So I guess that's an adjustment. Is there anything structurally you're looking for, though?
Well, I think it's clear, like something we were breaking down yesterday, Reach, about how you can get inside when they're fronting as far as they are, right? Like, there are ways of getting inside and for you to get body position on those players, right? So if you want to, you know, get it down to the nitty-gritty, well, we can talk about how you go about getting those different looks.
So two plays I identified that, you know, they were able to adjust or... take advantage of Nashville's D-zone positioning and the fronting, the aggressive fronting that they were going with in the defensive zone. The Suter chance at the side of the net mm-hmm. where the puck hits the end boards, and you know, maybe you are missing the net on purpose a little bit more when a forward gets behind the defender and is able to get to that puck first. Like, that all happens. Suter has, you know, body position. He has positioning on the defender because the defender is fronting and he's in front of Suter. So Suter's going to get to that puck first naturally. And the other play was Miller's tip in the slot. I wouldn't say high slot. It's actually the low slot because he's underneath his defender and is able to get that position ahead of him because that player is fronting and is out of position to defend Miller in that spot. Doesn't end up going in, but it hits Carrier and then hits the post. But Canucks got a grade A chance out of that. Those were two plays out of a lot of other ones that they could have probably created from game two, where they did make the most of Nashville's aggressive fronting. It all comes down to that, right? It's finding a better position in the offensive zone when you're controlling the puck. It's creating angles, moving your feet a little bit, maybe going for the on-purpose missed shot to get the Predators in a chaotic defensive posture, because that's what it does. It creates some chaos when you do get shots through. Like, those are the types of things the Canucks have to do if they do have as much zone possession time as they had in game two.
Yeah, you know, even rewatching it, it's just like, it's so frustrating because it's like, if you hit empty nets.
Man, rewatching was almost more frustrating.
It really was. Like, I had to hit pause and like go for a walk in my apartment a couple of times. Like this
I need
is
to lay off the spro
stunning.
Right now.
Because, like, in theory, like, hey, work the passes and the seams. Like, that's what's so frustrating. It's like they hit the seam passes. Those are difficult passes to make, and they hit them.
Well, that's
frequently,
sequence. That's also why you can't fully change what you're doing either.
Yeah, like it's
well, the third
tough.
Period, you could see their frustration start to boil over. And I think in the third period, more than the first two periods, is when they were just like throwing pucks into bodies and hoping for the best.
Mm-hmm. My biggest gripe wasn't the way they moved the puck. They moved the puck well in the offensive zone, right? Yeah. The issue was shot selection and how long it took to get those shots.
McCabe had a moment where he could have just one-timed one. Yeah. He feathered it off, so we know about the Garland one. You know, the Pedersen one, like the empty net, it's like...
Which one?
The empty net one at the end of the first period. That one you look at, it's like, oh, like maybe did you just rush it because there's 1 second left on the clock and did you get it off correctly?
He could have looked up.
He probably had.
I don't know that he could have. You look up, like,
no,
the second
I mean,
probably
just look
gone.
Up at the net.
I think he had a little bit more time than he thought.
Yeah,
he had literally
3 seconds, and so you could have taken.
No, he had like, it was like what, 1.8?
Yeah, it was like 2 seconds. Okay. It was like two when he got the puck. It was
felt like
two,
an eternity in the moment.
Yeah, when he got it, he had about 2 seconds, but it was enough for him to just like take a slower motion of doing it. Not stopping, but like the way he just rushed the shot, right? He probably had a beat before doing it.
Here's what I want to touch on. And this is why I brought up like the adjustments you want to see in a text coming in, 650. When players don't stay goal side, you should be able to get pucks down low and back in front of the net to your own players. And this is the thing, like, fronting is not this new phenomenon.
No.
Like, we've heard this phrase nonstop these last 5 days. Okay? This is not like something new that natural just discovery. Like, you know what we should do? We should put the guy in front of the screener.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we invented defense.
No.
This is not some new concept.
It's a fairly basic... The New York Rangers actually used to do it a lot with Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah, and giving up the prime real estate in front of the net seems like a bad idea. And the Canucks' best opportunities, for me, have come from the corners and below the goal line. Well, if they're giving up the front of the net, you should start creating your offense from the corners and below the goal line.
Well, exactly. You can also create those low to high plays more.
Yeah. I don't understand why they've pulled up at the hashes and gone retreated to the points and try to create their offense so much from there.
When you point that out, it's almost it makes it so clear as to why Pedersen's line has struggled more than almost any other line.
They're barely forecheck. They barely win forecheck.
His wingers aren't in any sense of the imagination considered playmakers. Not Nils Höglander, and certainly not Ilya Mikheyev or Sam Lafferty,
like,
in game one.
Höglander's had a fantastic year, right? Like, he's blown away my expectations. But he also kind of played a Cy Young year, It's 24-12, right?
And also
like
being understanding of, his strengths and weaknesses as a player. And you're right, Cy Young year, 24 and 12. And so as much as I've, talked about Pettersson these last couple of games and wanted more out of him. I also understand, like, there is an issue with the support he's getting from his wingers, from his line mates. And as I was looking through it, and the one thing actually stood out a lot to me today. Do you know what the Canucks' third most common forward line is?
Through these playoffs or?
Through the first two games.
It's going to be a trick answer. It's a trick question. It can't be like the top nine forwards.
Lindholm, Joshua Garland.
Yes.
Miller, Besser, Suter.
Yes.
The other one's going to involve Pettersson.
Lotto line?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Lotto line is number three.
Yeah, that sounds believable.
Which is kind of incredible, but it also tells you how Rick Tocchet seems to have an understanding that his Pettersson's not getting a lot of support from his line mates right now. And that's a problem in this series. It could be a problem going forward, but he's trying to find a way to get Pettersson some more support. And the way that he's doing that is putting him into spots with Miller and Besser. It hasn't really worked so much so far in the series. Per natural stat trick, 4 high danger chances against and just 1-4 when they've been on the ice for the almost 7 minutes together at 5-on-5. So it's still not even a ton of time, but you know, this is what they've had to resort to because that third line isn't going the way that they would like to. Like, so far, Pettersson's been most matched up with Colton Sissons, and the Predators are getting the most out of that matchup. Like, Colton Sissons is out-dueling Elias Pettersson. Is that because Colton Sissons is better than Elias Pettersson? No. Like, there's other issues going on there, and it's not all to do with Elias Pettersson.
Well, the question becomes at some point, and I don't think you're there yet because it's a 1-1 series, and I don't think the coach wants to show any sort of panic at all or any sort of distress about how the matchup is going. But let's say, for instance, that you don't win the game tonight and that line's not looking good. Can you afford to keep those three centers separated? Do you have to either? I know people want to see Pettersson with Garland and Joshua even. Okay, sure, whatever. The point, if you do that, what you're doing is you're loading up two lines and you're sacrificing the third line.
The other problem is you don't have a problem on the first two lines. Like, you're pretty much dominating when the other two lines are on the ice.
But given how Garland and Joshua have played together, is it worth at some point, let's say if you don't get going here, and hopefully they do, right? But if they don't get going here, to just try Lindholm with Pettersson again?
Go Hoglander, Pettersson, Lindholm, and then Bluger back with Joshua and Garland.
We know that's going to work.
It's got to be Hoglander?
Or McKay, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Or McKay, yeah.
The duo would be more about getting Lindholm and Pettersson together.
Yeah, it's something I've been discussing these past 2 days. Because you're right, like, Sissons has won, like, the goals for battle. But overall, like, I would bet on the underlying numbers if the Canucks go the three centers.
Normalizing over time, but this is the thing about
short samples is, you have to win the goals for battle. I totally understand that. But, like, their edge almost feels surplus in a way.
Yeah.
And I don't even think going Bluger on your third line is going to remove that edge.
Yeah.
Like, if Bluger can't beat McCarron or can't beat Sissons in a matchup, or at least play him to equal.
And especially with the wingers he'll have with the way they go. I mean, the duo is still Garland and Joshua.
Well, and even the fourth line in the last game, like Bluger, PDG, and Lafferty, they were fine together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really, like, again, I don't like to make it all about Elias Pettersson, but he is the main character in the conversation. And you talk about the power play needing more, 0 for its 6 attempts, could be changed if Pettersson hit an open net or took the shot rather than trying to finesse a pass through to Connor Garland. So, like, there's a lot there, but yes, it still does a lot come down to Elias Pettersson, unfortunately.
What if it was like Joshua, Pettersson, Garland, Suter, Miller, Lindholm, Mikheyev, Bluger, Besser?
But that's like doing lines you haven't
totally.
My problem with, like, going just in a completely different direction here, if you're Rick Tocchet, like, I think players can understand little tweaks, but if you're making drastic changes from everything that worked for you during the season, aren't you not kind of like raising a red flag of some sorts? Like, hey, we're panicking. It's a 1-1 series.
I'm talking about in a scenario where they lose
Game 3?
Yeah, Game 3.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, even that, I think if you go to me, that's like you're in a big trouble.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're down 3-1 or something, and you have to do something completely different. But I think more than anything right now, for the time being, I think they feel like they can win with their current lineup the way it's been, and they'll have to be proven wrong with that before they change it.
Do we think Nashville will go with a more aggressive play style here in game three? Like they were, especially after they took the early lead. Do we expect them to be as conservative as they were? Because that wasn't their identity during the season.
I would imagine they're going to take a few more chances.
What's the more aggressive version of Nashville, though?
More of what we saw in game one.
Well, like
pulling the zone a little bit in the defensive zone, trying to stretch the Canucks.
I felt like they did a lot of that in game two, to be honest.
Yeah?
Like, I thought the Canucks
not in
goal.
Not so much in the third.
Yeah, but you have a 3-0 lead. Like,
yeah.
To me, like, we've spent so much time talking about, like, win the game, and through 40 minutes, they'd already won the game, right? So, like, the 3-1 goal is created by them still being aggressive. Right, there's a loose puck in the neutral zone, and Lozon's like, "All right, I'll be the fourth guy in."
Yeah,
and he's up the ice.
Yeah,
yeah.
And Juleson sweeps that puck back in into the zone, and that's how it gets created. So, like, I've seen a very aggressive version of the Preds so far.
Well, they have been aggressive. They're not afraid of turning, and you know, to their credit, they will reset really quickly. They'll tag up really faster forwards, and they go straight in. Like, there's no like tagging up, taking your time. Like, they're very quick, so they'll try to catch you a lot. I do wonder, given how much they did retreat in the third period and how to a man they talked about, that's not our hockey, we have to be more. Do they overcompensate slightly to be like, hey, we have to be more aggressive, and you end up doing a bit too much?
Yeah.
Is that the hopeful way of looking at it?
That might be the hopeful way, but I think in general, the first 5-10 minutes of every hockey game is so important. I think tonight it's going to be huge. The Canucks need to get a lead. You haven't led in the first or second period in either of these two games.
So during the regular season, either game tied or leading was about 76% of the play.
Yeah,
for the Canucks,
which is insane.
They've led for 9% of the series, and I think tied has been 27 minutes through two games here. So a total of 36 minutes of 120. So about 25%. Give or take. Is that good math? No, it's terrible math. So somewhere in that range, 30% that they've been tied for.
And they, like, the Preds scored in the second minute the other night. First goal, like, both of these teams lived off scoring the first goal. I think the Predators, you mentioned the Canucks numbers. Predators scored first 50 times this year. So it's both of these teams love to get out in front early and then play with a lead. That's part of their identity. It's part of one of the ways that they identified they could have success as a team, and the Canucks just haven't gotten to that. So tonight, do you see an amped up crowd in Nashville and the Nashville players wanting to play to that, and you're able to maybe take advantage of them getting cooped up in the moment? I think that's the glass half full approach of it all, I think.
Yeah, I suppose so, to some extent. I think the most important thing in the game, we'll get into this more in the game, is Casey DeSmith.
A lot of pressure.
The first 10 minutes, that's the guy I'm keeping an eye on in this game.
The reason they go down in the second minute is partially because Casey DeSmith is a little over-aggressive, a little over-amped as the crowd is chanting his name.
But also on the road, you want to have confidence, right? And like, hey, you want to feel good with Demko out. We'll get to Demko here in a second. But I think with everything else going on too and them losing the last game mentally, you don't want him giving up a couple goals in the first 10 minutes.
I wonder if Nashville's impression of rewatching game two is also, hey, we got to just shoot more.
Yeah.
If you want to say something about them being more aggressive, just taking more opportunities to shoot. Because the play that's stuck in my head from game two is the one they didn't score on, is Forsberg shooting it. It lands right at his feet. He's got no idea. And Forsberg's poking away at it. And there's that same moment happened in the first period. It spills in front of him, and it gets swept away this time by the Canucks. But if I'm Nashville, home crowd, all these things, I'm launching as much rubber early against Casey DeSmith just to see how he reacts.
So Thatcher Demko, he's on the trip. We talked about this yesterday. And now yesterday, you know, we had Sat, you were mentioning yesterday, you're hearing that there's a chance he could return at some point in the second round. Later last night, some reports that Demko's out for the rest of the playoffs. Elliot Friedman, Rick Dhaliwal continuing to say that's not the case, or that's not what they've heard. What's the situation here with Thatcher Demko?
I have not heard the ACL stuff.
Okay.
I haven't. That's not to say, you know, they may not know something I don't know, right? I haven't heard that. And when asking, I was told the same thing I was told yesterday, which I mentioned, which was the timeline is perhaps the second round. We'll see if that comes to pass. First of all, you have to beat Nashville for that to be a consideration. And the second part comes down to his rehab. And I'll put it to you guys here, right? Like, because I think it'll depend on where he's at. Given that he came back from his injury on the slightly early side of expectations, something that Woodley talked about, right? Are they going to bring him back as quickly, considering his knee couldn't hold up? So he could be back potentially the second round. You know, that's kind of what I've heard.
Yeah.
In terms of that being likely or that even being a good idea is a completely different matter, right? But yeah, I haven't heard the ACL stuff.
It is interesting. Like, the ACL stuff, it almost feels like a similar situation now to what was going on with William Nylander, where there isn't exact information out there, so we're left to speculate as to what exactly the issue might be, and that's where we're headed with this thing, and that's unfortunate. I would imagine if Demko is cleared and he feels good, it would be very hard for the team to keep him out of games should he want to get back in.
Yeah, but I think the question more than anything is, what is the true nature of the injury? Is it a 4 to 6 week injury? Is it a 2 to 4 week injury? Because then it's like, okay, if it's a 2 to 4 week injury, him being back on the 4 week side, well, you're taking your time. If it's 4 to 6 and he's coming back before week four, which puts you at end of the second round, these are things you don't have answers to. But I do think the overall sense I've gotten, and I know Dolly Wall and Friedman have had the same thing, is, and I know even Sarah Valley mentioned the same thing, that maybe second round, potentially. And maybe it's more likely it's the conference final, right? Mm-hmm. Like, depending on where his rehab goes, given what happened when he came back from his last injury. I think in many ways, he's not imminent on his arrival, right? And even if they win this round, don't expect them back in game one or game two. We're talking about if he's back, it's going to be sometime, perhaps late in the second round.
You know what strikes me too? The amount this has been discussed, do you think it comes with a little bit of hubris that they're still like, oh, well, they'll be in round two?
Well, right? I think that's the thing to be careful about. Yeah.
Like, there's some big problems to sort out for game three and game four.
Yes.
That even Thatcher Demko's recovery might prove to be redundant if the Canucks aren't there in round two.
Well, exactly. It's really getting ahead of yourself in many ways.
And in some ways, like, it's taken some attention off of the Canucks being in a 1-1 series.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe they've drawn some positives out of that because, you know, not everyone's mentioning Elias Pettersson's name every minute.
it's only
Reach is focused. Actually, I changed my tune in 20 minutes here. Reach is focused.
Well, I mean, say, for the team's perspective, is it better to have people guessing about what your situation is? But then, like, they're talking about something that's not relevant to today. Yeah. To your point, number one, the topic is Demko, not Pettersson struggles or the team 1-1 going into Nashville.
Brock Besser doesn't have a goal. The team hasn't scored a power play goal. Yeah.
And then, even so, against for your playoff opponents, you'd rather have a little uncertainty about, you know, them not knowing when they're going to face Demko or not, right? So, I mean, as long as you feel good about the information internally and you're all on the same page, do you care what people are saying on the outside?
Could be a happy coincidence for the Canucks that maybe some of the focus is directed elsewhere. Since we're on the topic, I did want to point out on the Elias Pettersson factor, IMAX
piece.
Here
we go, Pettersson again.
No, just
it was a really good piece.
IMAX piece with Pettersson yesterday, and
wait, you're telling me IMAX had a good piece?
Well, it just seems like the players really trust IMAX to discuss these kinds of things. But I at least from the quotes, Pettersson seems to have the right mindset in the situation. You know, he mentioned it. I was in the room after the game. You know, you could tell how distraught he was, knowing that he missed some glorious opportunities to score goals, and he factored in on some of the goals against. But, you know, him just simply saying, I've been wanting to do too much instead of staying with and playing my game. Of course, play hard and use the adrenaline, but I've definitely been trying to do too much instead of playing my game and letting the game come to you. One of the things that is even perturbed me a little bit in some of the discussion around Pettersson, and some of it is mostly from outside media and national media focusing on his game and how he struggled in game two, is like this idea that he's disinterested. But, you know, my view of it is more in line with these Pettersson quotes, is that he's trying to force it. He wants it so bad that, you know, he's gripping his stick a little bit too much, not realizing maybe he does have an extra beat to take, make sure he takes the open net as it's gaping in front of him in that first period opportunity from game two. You know, I think the quotes were, it's at least what you want to hear out of Elias Pettersson.
Sure. The comments about like disinterested, like I think they're unfounded. But if you look at a moment,
yeah,
let's say win a battle against Bovillier,
yeah.
Like, what's the problem? You have position. Your stick is going to get to the puck first. Why didn't you finish that play?
Yeah.
The pass into the middle of the ice. Like, you made the right read to be there for support up the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you know where Besser was? So it's like there's pivotal moments that I understand where the disinterested claims come from. But, man, he's also been on the puck. He's also put in a lot of effort. It's just you got to convert a chance.
Yeah.
It'll alleviate so much stress of this series. If someone in the top six can score a goal right now.
I actually, I took a look at the individual event map for Pettersson on Natural Stat Trick. I posted it on Twitter. And you look at like all of his opportunities, everywhere that he is taking shots from, these are spots you want Pettersson to take shots from.
Yeah.
It's just too many of them have an M next to it, which means he missed the net, or they were blocked. And that's the difference that needs to come for Elias Pettersson and the Vancouver Canucks. Bic, thank you so much.
Mailbag Friday today?
Yeah, Mailbag Friday.
Can I put in a submission?
Sure.
Who will play Sat Shaw in the movie that's been produced? I don't know if you guys heard his hit in Nashville, man. They were like, Sat, we need a movie about your life. So who's going to play Sat in the movie?
They were hyped.
Yeah, they were hyped.
Who's going to play Sat in a movie? Probably Brad Pitt, because both of them are always eating all the time. That's
Speaking of which, I'm getting hungry. Should we have a snack?
Were you a big
break?
Fan? So we're all big fans of the Seahawks pick, right?
Oh, my goodness. What a home run.
Yeah.
Woo! I put that into the universe, wish-casted it, and it came through. Huge.
All right. That's Bic Nizar. You'll hear him again on the post-game show and, of course, through intermissions during the Canucks and Predators Game 3. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canucks Central, and playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Merit Kitchens, Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at meritkitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. This is Canucks Central.